close to Israel, and I don't understand that.
In a now notorious incident, Israeli forces killed 15 medics and aid workers, with a new video emerged showing their deliberate execution, as the victims were wearing highly reflective uniforms and were aboard clearly marked Red Crescent's ambulances on March 23rd. The video contradicts Israeli army claims that the vehicles were fired upon as they advanced suspiciously towards troops without headlights or emergency signals.
I can't imagine how we could believe anything coming from the Israelis, especially from the IDF. These people have been calling the children Hamas for a year and a half now. So what really surprised me is that some medias are still talking about alleged or probably or maybe or things like that. This is what's shocking. It's not shocking that they have killed some humanitarian workers and assassinated them.
The evidence showing execution-style killings was retrieved from a phone belonging to one of the victims, who was buried by Israeli forces in a mass grave.
Israel has once again warned residents to evacuate large areas of the territory ahead of further military action. Demonstrators here are asking where Gaza civilians, who are bearing the brunt of the conflict, can seek shelter or safety. Peter Hume, Paris.
It is only the second visit after his US trip since the International Criminal Court issued an arrest warrant against Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in November 2024 and his first visit to Europe since October 7, 2023. As a party to the Rome Statute, Hungary was required to act on the ICC warrant, but it ignored its obligations. In a press conference, Orban stated that Netanyahu's visit aims to deepen military and intelligence cooperation as well as economic ties between the two sides. He stated that Israel is one of Hungary's largest trading partners.
What makes this matter sad is that today here in Budapest, the killer of 50,000 Palestinian citizens, and mostly innocent women, children, and elderly, is here in town. That's the sad part about it.
While Israeli flags were hoisted on government buildings and all bridges across the Danube, anti-Netanyahu protests have been banned by the authorities.
Since the beginning of the genocidal war, 544 days now, there was a clear position from the Hungarian government saying that any pro-Palestine protests will not be permitted or allowed, and that's why people couldn't express their opinion clearly.
Smaller spontaneous protests occurred throughout the day, resulting in fines and arrests. One activist who had been fined several times stated that she was not even informed of the reason for the fines.
No, and the second time they pretended not to speak English until I was done. They spoke English and told me they do speak English, and when I asked them why, they refused to answer the two times.
Orban is not the only European leader who announced his willingness to defy international law. This state visit could set a precedent many around Europe fear.
This is, I think, one of the delicate elements of this issue, that it's not only Orban. It may be Merz in the near future. Tusk, the Prime Minister of Poland, has said the same.
Despite Orban's breach of international law, European governments have remained silent. As a result, observers believe that this is just the first of several upcoming trips to EU member states. Germany's next chancellor, Friedrich Merz, has already signaled his intention to invite Netanyahu and refuses to commit his country to enforce the ICC arrest warrant. Dieter Reinisch, Budapest.
We are here to denounce the ongoing massacres in Gaza and the Israeli incursion in Dara. The people resisted bravely, sacrificing martyrs in the fight against occupation. We stand with them and will never accept Israeli control over our land.
As Israeli airstrikes on Syria escalate, the response from the international community remains absent. In Dara, however, the people have taken matters into their own hands. The popular resistance in southern Syria has proven that armed struggle remains the only way to confront Israeli expansion. We stand with our brothers in Dara, just as we stand with Gaza. Resistance will never be defeated. Just as Gaza's fighters remain strong, so too will the resistance in Syria. Syrians and Palestinians are united, and together we will defeat Israeli occupation.
Beyond the battlefield, many protesters also blamed Arab regimes for their complicity in Israel's crimes. Calls for accountability rang out against Arab leaders, accusing them of betraying the Palestinian cause and enabling Israeli aggression in the region.
The Israeli occupation will fall. It's only a matter of time. But those who betrayed Gaza and Dara, like Jordan, Egypt, the UAE, and others, must be held accountable. Their complicity is a crime. And no matter what they do, the people will triumph.
With every act of Israeli aggression, the spirit of resistance grows stronger. Today's protests in Damascus and other Syrian cities are yet another testament to the unwavering determination of Syrians and Palestinians to defeat Israel. Ali Mohammed, Damascus.
In Al-Katiba area in northwestern Khan Yunis, which is included within the so-called safe zone and not far from the infamous Al-Mawasi area, last night the families inside this neighborhood were sleeping and suddenly a massive explosion happened that shook the entire neighborhood. This home, which belongs to Al-Aggad family, was targeted last night, killing the entire family inside this house. Father, the mother, and the three little children. But not only that, because of the devastating and massive scale of the bombardment, two of the neighbors as well were killed within this airstrike that was carried by the Israeli occupation.
You can see how closely the homes are built here. We were jolted awake by a thunderous blast, only to find the remains of neighbors scattered across the streets. Our neighborhood has already borne the brunt of Israel's aggression, and now, despite being labeled as a safe zone and instructed to be sought refuge here, we are still enduring relentless bombardment.
The families could collect the remains of the family and the neighbors due to this brutal attack that literally turned the family inside this home into pieces. The neighbors are still cleaning the rubble, looking for any of the remains of the family that was killed here.
The attack was so intense that we thought our home had been bombed, but it was our neighbors. We are still clearing the rubble, searching for more remains of the children who were killed alongside their parents here. These innocent people did nothing to deserve such a brutal end. We call on everyone in the world to put an end to this genocide.
This is the situation inside the so-called safe zone, where the occupation is now directing the families in southern Khan Yunis and Rafah to come to. More massacres and more killing is awaiting the families here who are still subjected to this massive campaign by the occupation that doesn't seem to go any easier on the families here. Ahmed al-Najjar, Khan Yunis.
Whatever goes up must come down. A fitting theme for Yemen's military operations in support of Palestine. The armed forces of Yemen have downed yet another U.S. MQ-9 Reaper drone, an unmanned combat aerial vehicle capable of remotely control.
The Yemeni army's air defenses, with the help of Allah Almighty, were able to shoot down an American MQ-9 drone while it was carrying out hostile missions in the airspace of Al Hudaydah Governorate. The drone was downed with a locally made surface-to-air missile. This is the second drone being shot down in 72 hours and the 17th one during the operations in support of Gaza.
Yemen began its pro-Gaza operations in November 2023. Experts say the growing number of American drones being shot down by Yemen not only reflects tactical success, but signals a significant leap in the country's military capability.
The U.S. is very upset with what they have suffered in the Red Sea and Arabian Sea as Yemen continues to attack them. Moreover, Yemen will continue to advance militarily. Yemen is not satisfied with only shooting down 17 U.S. drones. In the near future, there will be more surprises that will benefit the people and armed forces of Yemen.
Amid the successful Yemeni operations, U.S. President Donald Trump has claimed that the country conducts its attacks with Iran's support, an allegation strongly denied by the Yemenis.
We will continue to support the people of Palestine. Our military success came from the preparation of our armed and air defense forces, and we will continue to counter this American aggression on our nation. We will continue to support Palestine. Iran is an ally of Yemen. However, they have no say whatsoever with regards to our wars and our military, defending our land from this U.S. aggression.
The United States launched intense airstrikes on Yemen last month, after the Arab country resumed its maritime military operations in support of Palestinians in war-ravaged Gaza.
The Yemeni armed forces have shot down more U.S. drones, demonstrating their growing capability to counter advanced aerial threats and sending a clear message of defiance amid ongoing aggression against their country. Yusuf Mawdi, Sana'a.
On Wednesday, a number of Italian lawmakers pressured Italy's Foreign Minister Antonio Tajani to finally express words of condemnation for the Israeli regime and Benjamin Netanyahu after 18 months of relentless slaughter in Gaza. Tajani answered questions on Israel's genocidal acts in the Palestine during a question time in the Senate. His words were far from condemnation for Netanyahu's heinous crimes.
Our government's position is clear. Conditions for a political dialogue must be created in order to achieve a two-state solution, but without Hamas. I will reiterate this at tomorrow's EU summit of foreign ministers.
I'm flabbergasted. Once again, you haven't been able to express a single word of condemnation for Israel's onslaught of more than 50,000 people in Gaza, many of whom are children. Gaza is razed to the ground. Minister, you haven't been able to say a single word on the one responsible for this massacre, war criminal Netanyahu.
Italy's support to Israel's genocidal operations in Gaza has been so far unconditional. In January, the Italian government told Israeli officials that Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu would not be arrested under an ICC warrant were he to visit the country. War criminal Netanyahu is slated to pay an official visit to Hungary this week following an invitation from Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orbán. Some Italian lawmakers have said Hungary should deny entry to Netanyahu or arrest him if he sets foot in the country.
Netanyahu's visit to Hungary is one of the many legs of the Israeli government's macabre tour of Europe. We deem Netanyahu and his government partners bloodthirsty war criminals, and unfortunately, the international community and most Western governments have failed to provide any opposition to Israel at all. We must strongly oppose the Israeli genocide by imposing sanctions on Netanyahu's government, including suspending Israel-EU association agreement.
Former EU High Representative for Foreign Affairs Josep Borrell has often insisted on convening a summit with Israel to discuss violations of human rights obligations under the EU-Israel association agreement. However, Borrell's successor, Kaya Kallas, has so far been much more obliging towards the regime than her predecessor, Max Civili, Rome.
Rabbi English Radio, a window to peace of mind and spirituality. You can tune in to Rabbi English Radio 24 hours a day. We are with you. Are you with us? Are you with us? Are you with us? This is our voice from the heart of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Rabbi English Radio.
supplication on Wednesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who appointed the night to be a garment, and sleep for a rest, and day he appointed for a rising. To thee belongs praise, for thou roused me from my sleep. And hadst thou willed, thou wouldst have made it everlasting, an everlasting praise that will never be cut off, and whose number the creatures will never count. O Allah, to thee belongs praise, for thou created, then proportioned, and ordained, and decreed, and gave death, and bestowed life, and made sick, and healed, and made well, and afflicted, and sat upon the throne, and encompassed the kingdom. I supplicate thee with the supplication of one whose mediation is weak, whose stratagems have been cut off, whose term has drawn near, whose expectation from this world has shrunk, whose neediness for thy mercy has intensified, whose remorse for his neglect has become great, whose slips and stumbles have become many, and whose repentance is devoted sincerely to thy face. So bless Muhammad, the seal of the prophets, and his household, the good, the pure. And provide me with the intercessions of Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, and deprive me not of his companionship. Surely thou art the most merciful of the merciful. O Allah, decree for me on Wednesday four things. Induce me to be strong in obedience to thee, to be joyful in worshipping thee, to be desirous of thy reward, and to abstain from that which would make incumbent upon me thy painful punishment. Thou art gentle to whom thou wilt.
From Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marcia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, no words can describe what we're witnessing taking place in Gaza, and no one outside of the Strip can really fathom what it is like to be in Gaza and go through this Holocaust. 18 months of sheer madness and hell as billions of people in this dystopian world just watch while Palestinians are being starved to death, buried alive, beheaded, torn to pieces, burned alive, kidnapped and tortured. Just about every other sadistic crime imaginable has been committed against them by this U.S. Zionist genocide. I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. Mazen Ghoum Saeed, Palestinian scientist and author out of Bethlehem. And Fa Hughes, journalist, author, and activist out of Belfast. Well, thank you both for being with me. Let me start this off in Bethlehem. I mean, Mazen, it gets just more and more difficult to talk about this every day. Of course, that's the very least that we can do when our Palestinian brothers and sisters are going through the sheer hell. Obviously, not only in Gaza, but we also were going to get into the West Bank, too. Now, Mazen, the regime targeted in the middle of the night a tent housing journalists that caught a fire and burnt people alive. I mean, what does this mean exactly? People are being targeted who have been displaced, who are living in tents. And why journalists? We have 232 journalists, at least, that have been killed in Gaza since October of 2023. Why?
Well, this is, as you pointed out, this is unprecedented, and it leaves us pretty much speechless. I mean, it's very hard to even convey the level of horror. When you mention the number of journalists killed in about a year and a half or less, that's more journalists than killed in the last wars in the past 100 years combined, you know, combined. Even World War II and World War I, when you add all the journalists killed in them, you wouldn't get that number. And that's journalists alone. And then, of course, medical personnel. And, of course, children. This is targeting children because 50% of the Gaza population is children. And one incident, 8 of the 15 people killed were children. So this levels of horrors, levels of, you know, depravity that the Zionist regime has gone down the road in with the support of Western powers, Western governments, is unprecedented in world history. And really, what can I say? I mean, as I said, it's very hard for me to articulate how frustrated and angry we are at the silence and seeing Netanyahu strut himself in Hungary, and now the U.S. right-wing fascist governments that support him.
Yes, indeed. Well, I mean, Mazen talked about the hypocrisy of these Western entities, but what about professional organizations? I mean, why isn't there more of an international outcry from professional journalist organizations regarding this targeting of journalists?
Well, I think the immediate answer that comes to mind is whoever pays the paper holds the tune. These professional journalists that you're alluding to, I don't know how professional they are. I thought the idea of journalism was holding truth to power. But what they are they are bought assets. They are very similar in their construction, and they are very similar in their attitude to the bought assets of the political systems across Western political society. These people who write for The Guardian, The Times, The New York Times, Le Monde, Die Welt, all these different prestigious international journals, they are all paid assets of the people who are their employers. Their employers are just as complicit as the Zionist government in covering up the murders of the innocent people in Gaza, the men, the women, and the children. So when we talk about journalism, and we talk about free speech, and we talk about holding truth to power, none of this exists. The illusion in the West that we live in a democracy is slowly being worn away by the resilience of the people in Palestine and Yemen and Iran, who show constantly that it is the naked hypocrisy, it is the lies, it is the propaganda. When we think that the first casualty of war is truth, what we're witnessing is a propaganda war by the mainstream media in the West to create the conditions within society here to allow some form of ongoing almost acceptance of what is happening 4,000 miles away from Britain, you know, God knows how many miles away from America. But while the mainstream media continues to lie, while it continues to defend Israel as if it has a right to murder innocent men, women, and children in self-defense, as it claims we will continue to have a compliant media leading to a compliant society where people make real against what's happening. But they're not even, I can guarantee you, I live in the West and we are not shown the truth on a regular basis or a daily basis of what's happening in West Asia. We are constantly being bombarded with propaganda, state narrative, and the Israeli cover of anti-Semitism. But anyone who stands up for the truth and tries to expose these heinous war crimes, there have recently been 8 IOF soldiers who have returned to Britain, who are British nationals. They're walking the streets free. These men should be questioned, arrested, interrogated, and prosecuted for the war crimes in Gaza. But they are walking free, and this is Western society and Western establishment showing its true face to the world.
Yes, indeed. Well, Mazen, earlier atrocities include the targeted killing of 15 medics who were assassinated by the regime. Now, the level of inhumanity is unimaginable, but continually happening on a daily basis. In your perspective, why is the regime so ruthless and targeting civilians and civilian infrastructure as it continues to do?
Well, Zionism from the beginning wanted to obliterate our existence in Palestine. That's a whole game of Zionism. They want the land without the people who come with the land. And even the land, they want to reshape it to fit their own agenda by destroying indigenous trees, olive trees, fig trees, almond trees, etc., and plant European pine trees. They want to make Palestine a European country without its indigenous humans, plants, and animals. This is the whole idea of Zionism. This is the whole idea of colonialism, of course, as practiced in what became as Australia or United States. So this is expected from colonialists, and it is also expected, of course, as pointed out by the other guests, that there are resistance to these, resistance actions to these plans of ethnic cleansing, genocide, ecocide, scholasticide, medicide, killing of, trying to destroy. I mean, all the mosques pretty much in Gaza are gone. 3 churches are destroyed, including 3rd oldest church in Palestine. So this is expected. They want to destroy anything that does not fit their vision of a Jewish state, a Europeanized Jewish state.
Okay, well, the Israeli regime is starving people to death, beheading them, burying them alive, and so much more. We've seen people flying in the air due to the velocity of bombs exploding. I mean, when it seems the situation can't get any worse, as I said, in Gaza, then the regime does something even more sadistic. It has been given a free hand. What is its end aim, in your perspective? What's the end game for Israel?
Yes, well, what we're witnessing at the moment is hell on earth. It's the only way to describe what's happening on the ground in Gaza and indeed the West Bank. For people who believe in heaven and hell, for people who believe that hell is a place where people will be tortured for eternity. That's what we're witnessing in Gaza. That's what we're witnessing in the West Bank and in Lebanon and in Syria. But the end game is obvious. It is a white European colonial occupation of Palestine. We're witnessing total war. We're witnessing the use of armaments. We're witnessing the use of torture and brutality. We're witnessing the use of the destruction of the medical facilities, the infrastructure for the water, the fuel, and using starvation as a method of subjugation against the Palestinian people. The message they're sending is surrender or die, and if they surrender, then expulsion will be next. It is the plan of the colonizer to displace and then replace the indigenous population. So this is a scorched earth policy. What we appear to be witnessing now is that as they move the population around, they send the evacuation orders in order to clear a kind of field of fire, and then they go in and destroy all the buildings. So the end plan, whether or not they succeed is a different matter, is to leave no buildings standing in Gaza, to have the people not even living in tents or porta cabins, but to be surrounded by a military force that is shooting people at will with impunity and with the backing of Europe and the United States, America and Canada. So the end plan is the total extermination or expulsion or extradition of the indigenous population. But we all know it won't end there. They want parts of Egypt, they want Iraq, they want parts of Lebanon, and they want to go as far as they can towards Saudi Arabia with Iraq's Greater Israel Project. So the Palestinians now are fighting the same fascism that the Russians fought during the Second World War. They have been dehumanized, they have been slaughtered, they have been shot at for fun. The murder of those 15 humanitarian aid workers, as far as I'm aware, that was coordinated with the Israelis, that those ambulances would be allowed into that area to recover the dead and the wounded. That became a trap. Those people were lured in, and they were summarily executed, and the autopsies appeared to show that their hands were tied behind their backs. They were shot in the head at close range, and it's part of the psychological war that no one is safe in Gaza, no matter what part of civil society you're from. No one is safe anywhere at any time. They will murder the innocent. They will murder those who come initially as the first responders to help save human life, which is a natural human reaction to run towards the aid of others in distress, and then to murder the very people and medics who try to save them, and then murder the doctors in the hospitals who try to save what's left.
Right. Well, Mazen, you're in Bethlehem. You're about 73 kilometers from Gaza. Tell me, what is it like right now for the Palestinians on the West Bank in general? I mean, knowing that it's been over a month that the regime has not allowed any food supplies or aid in, and of course the 18 months that this has been going on, and now of course we are seeing increased aggression against the West Bank itself, but to know that you're just 73 kilometers from there and yet basically helpless as far as helping them.
Well, the situation in central Palestine, the West Bank, is unfolding similar to what happened in the Gaza Strip. And it's a slow process, of course, much less intense than what's happening in the Gaza Strip. But nevertheless, it's going on. I mean, just yesterday, they killed a 14-year-old Palestinian child who's a dual citizen, actually, a U.S. citizen also. And the U.S. didn't even flinch about that. This is in the West Bank. The destruction of homes continues in the refugee camps. In Bethlehem, where I live, is three refugee camps. They are being targeted, Aida, Azza, and Haisha camp. And in the Haisha camp, the largest one, they came in and distributed flyers basically warning or threatening people that they will do to that refugee camp what they did to the refugee camps in the north of the West Bank and in the Gaza Strip, which is complete demolition of these sites. And you can see the pictures on your screen, of course, of what the Israeli military is doing. As it destroys homes, as it destroys livelihoods of people, as it impoverishes people in the West Bank. Similar, as I said, to what they had done in Gaza Strip, destroying infrastructure like roads and electricity grids and water supply and so on, but also homes and clinics and other facilities. So it is an unfolding horror that is going to expand to the West Bank at a much larger scale. So how do we feel in the West Bank? We feel, of course, trepidations and anger at the international community for their silence about what happened in Gaza, what is happening in Gaza, and what is happening now increasingly in the West Bank. the loss of our humanity, the loss of international law, basically the ending of the UN as a functioning agency, and the ignorance of International Criminal Court and International Court of Justice rulings.
Well, Fra, do you think that the violence of the regime in the West Bank will backfire on it? I mean, as the attacks and the destruction of Palestinian homes will lead to more people joining the resistance, because basically there's nothing else that they can do, and increase retaliatory operations against the Zionist regime?
Well, we've seen very little retaliatory actions against the regime because the people are very limited, I would imagine. I'm sitting here for my own thousands of miles, and I've been in Gaza in 2010 with George Galloway. I've visited the occupied territories on three different occasions. I've been to the refugee camp in Bethlehem. I've been to Nabi Saleh for the Friday protest. The people are very, very, very limited in their scope. I mean, they're facing the fourth largest army in the world. They have tanks, they have airplanes, they have artillery, they have armored vehicles, and they have no conscience, no mercy, and no compassion. This is the people that they're facing. A very small armed resistance that we witnessed previously in Jenin finds it very difficult to stand up against an army which is basically financed, armed, and then rearmed by the American administration. Let's not forget the 600,000 babies that died in Iraq under the sanctions, and then a million people murdered in Iraq by America and Britain in their illegal war. It's, you know, it's amazing that the resistance in both Gaza and in the West Bank can do as much as they are actually doing in the face of this murderous onslaught. So all we can do is, under international law, is to acknowledge the right that people living under occupation have to resist that occupation by any and all means necessary. So from 4,000 miles away, all I can do is watch almost helplessly what's happening on the ground in both Gaza and in the West Bank. And, you know, we're watching this unfold in real time, a genocide on our screens, a genocide on our phones, and our colleague is 100% correct. The impotency of the UN, it's all been shattered. All the illusions of the West talking about, military intervention to protect human rights in Libya when NATO bombed Libya, and the murderous death of Muammar Gaddafi. So the West is totally complicit in all this. The people in Palestine have the right to resist. It's potentially all they can do, but they're being corralled into smaller and smaller and smaller areas and being surrounded more and more and more by a merciless military onslaught, by people who are supremacists, by people who are racists, and by people who have no value for human life other than their own. If you're not Jewish and you're not a Zionist, they have no respect for the human life of the other, and no respect for the values of anyone who is not of their supremacist
cabal. Right, right. Well, Mazen, tell me, what's the mindset of the young people that you're around in Bethlehem, in the West Bank right now? I mean, tell me, just give me the vibe, what they're saying.
Well, most young people in the West Bank are, of course, like young people everywhere. They long for a decent life, they long for jobs, they long for having their freedom to move about, to travel even. Most of them are not even allowed to travel 5 kilometers, let's say, from Bethlehem to Jerusalem to visit the holy sites or pray at their holy sites, whether the Christian holy sites or the Muslim holy sites in Jerusalem are off limits to us. So the young people are, of course, frustrated, pained, and angry, and they watch in amazement as the rest of the world, again, chucks these Israeli violations aside, puts them aside, and focuses on selling more weapons to that regime, giving more weapons to that regime, and protecting it from international law. the young people in Palestine, there were demonstrations actually today. Thousands of people were out in the streets, as there was also a strike to basically calling for a stop for this ongoing crimes against humanity. So our people, like those people you also see on your screen, internationals who are acting, our young people are also acting, although we are under more severe restrictions than those younger people in other countries. But of course, that's coming in other countries, repression, as you know, in Europe and the US against young people protesting. Many students also lost their positions at the universities inside the United States for simply speaking out about human rights.
Right. And just I have just about 30 seconds. Fra, what message would you want to give to people around the world if they're not involved at all? I mean, what do you see as their responsibility in dealing with this genocide?
Well, people can't get involved in coming out onto the streets if they can't get involved in civil disobedience, if they can't get involved in trying to prevent arms shipments from leaving the different ports and airports all over Western Europe, then what they must do is BDS. What they must do is boycott, divest, sanction, and they must raise their voices, and they must stand shoulder to shoulder the people being oppressed and murdered in Palestine. So if you can't do anything, join the boycott movement and try to economically put some pressure on the Zionist apartheid racist state.
And on that note, I thank both of you for being with me. Mazen Qomsai, Palestinian scientist and author out of Bethlehem. Fra Hughes, journalist, author, and activist out of Belfast. Thank you for being with us on another Spotlight. Goodbye.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Ted Cruz, the Republican senator from Texas, has warned that his fellow Republicans risk a bloodbath in the 2026 midterm elections if Donald Trump's Liberation Day tariffs cause a recession. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. British newspaper The Guardian has covered the story and tells us more. The first signs of an internal US political backlash against Donald Trump's declaration of a global trade war are starting to emerge amid tanking stock markets worldwide, including on Wall Street, and widespread international criticism of the move. Just hours after Donald Trump unveiled a sweeping panoply of tariffs in an event he dubbed Liberation Day, four Republican senators openly defied him by voting for a Senate resolution from Democrats demanding that the 25% tariffs on Canadian products be reversed. The resolution lacks the force of law, but its support from Mitch McConnell and Rand Paul, both of Kentucky, Susan Collins of Maine, and Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, immediately signaled the deep misgivings among some Republicans over Donald Trump's tariff gambit, which has triggered a global sell-off of stocks. Mitch McConnell, the former Senate Majority Leader, issued a scathing denunciation after Wednesday evening's vote, calling tariffs bad policy that would trigger economic hardship. Mitch McConnell said in a statement, trade wars with our partners hurt working people most. Tariffs drive up the cost of goods and services. They're a tax on everyday working Americans. Further criticism came from Donald Trump's former Vice President Mike Pence, who called the tariffs the biggest peacetime tax hike in U.S. history. Mike Pence posted, "These tariffs are nearly 10 times the size of those imposed during the Trump-Pence administration and will cost American families over $3,500 per year." The four Republicans who voted with Democrats did so despite a public appeal from Donald Trump not to support the resolution, tabled by Tim Kaine, a Democratic senator from Virginia who was Hillary Clinton's running mate in the 2016 presidential election, which Donald Trump won. The resolution was aimed at curtailing the powers that Trump claimed under the International Emergency Economic Powers Act, which he has invoked to tackle the United States' $1.2 trillion trade deficit, and in the case of Canada, cited the influx of fentanyl through its border. Continue with the Guardian's coverage of this story. Mitch McConnell pulled no punches in his attack on Donald Trump's policy. He said, preserving the long-term prosperity of American industry and workers requires working with our allies, not against them. With so much at stake globally, the last thing we need is to pick fights with the very friends with whom we should be working to protect against China's trade policies and practices. Mitch McConnell added, at a time when Americans are tightening their belts, we would do well to avoid policies that heap on the pain. We ought to strengthen our friendships abroad and reinforce our allies as pillars of American prosperity and security. Rand Paul, his fellow Kentuckian, said the tariffs were unconstitutional. Rand Paul told reporters, "Our Constitution was very specific that taxes, tariffs are a form of tax. Taxes originate in the House, come to the Senate, and then go to the President." Rand Paul added, "They don't just go to the President and no one else. What kind of system would it be if all of our taxes and laws were passed by one person?" He later told Fox News Channel, "Trade is proportional to wealth. The last 70 years of international trade has been an exponential curve upwards, and the last 70 years of prosperity has been upwards also. We are richer because of trade with Canada, and so is Canada." Susan Collins, the senator from Maine, said tariffs would damage lobstering, agriculture, and the pulp and paper industries in her state, which borders Canada. She also lambasted imposing tariffs on U.S. allies. She said on the Senate floor, "The fact is the vast majority of fentanyl in America comes from the southern border with Mexico rather than the northern border with Canada." She added, "One of my biggest concerns is we should be distinguishing between allies and our adversaries and not treating them the same way." Lisa Murkowski, a senator from Alaska, said tariffs would also hurt her state and urged Donald Trump to find a better way to mutually secure our borders and address fentanyl trafficking than by starting a trade war. She posted on X, "While not all Canadian trade practices are fair, I'm keenly aware of the negative impacts in store for Alaskan families and businesses should tariffs drive up costs of essential goods." She added, "In Alaska, we share more than 1,538 miles of border with Canada. We are friends, we are neighbors, we are partners and allies. when it comes to our economies, our mutual defense, our cultures, and yes, our trade. The outspoken Republican criticism hinted at a wider unease in the Republican Party that is mostly being kept muted for fear of repercussions from Donald Trump. Tom Tillis, a Republican senator from North Carolina, warned about potential irreparable damage to his farming constituents before Wednesday's announcement. Tom Tillis told CNN, "Anyone who says there may be a little bit of pain before we get things right needs to talk to my farmers, who are one crop away from bankruptcy." The Economic Times has also covered this same story and tells us more. Ted Cruz, the Republican senator from Texas, has warned that his fellow Republicans risk a bloodbath in the 2026 midterm elections if Donald Trump's Liberation Day tariffs cause a recession in the United States. Ted Cruz also warned that the president's tariffs, if they stay in place for long and are met by global retaliation on American goods, could trigger a full-blown trade war that would destroy jobs here at home and do real damage to the U.S. economy. He added, 100 years ago, the U.S. economy didn't have the leverage to have the kind of impact we do now. But I worry there are voices within the administration that want to see these tariffs continue forever and ever. The Texan's comments made on his verdict podcast on Friday, 4th of April, were a further sign that the imposition of global reciprocal duties on imported goods is causing unease among Republicans. The Republican Senator Chuck Grassley of Iowa introduced bipartisan legislation on Thursday, 3rd of April, to grant Congress more power over placing tariffs on U.S. trading nations. The bill, co-sponsored by the Democratic Senator Maria Cantwell, would reaffirm the role of Congress in setting and approving trade policy. On his podcast, Ted Cruz warned the tariffs and trade retaliation over the long term could push the United States into a recession. Ted Cruz said, "You would face a Democratic House, and you might even face a Democratic Senate." Ted Cruz warned, "If we're in the middle of a recession and people are hurting badly, they punish the party in power." He added he did not share the White House's position that the tariffs would usher in a booming economy. "But if every other country on earth hits the United States with retaliatory tariffs and Trump's so-called reciprocal levies remain in place, that is a terrible outcome that would destroy jobs here at home and do real damage to the U.S. economy."
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. We'll be right back.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The headlines, dozens more civilians lose their lives in fresh Israeli strikes in Gaza as the regime's genocide rages on across the blockaded territory. The United States presses ahead with its brutal military aggression against Yemen, killing and injuring over two dozen civilians in the latest airstrikes. And Tehran announces high-level, indirect negotiations with Washington will be held in Oman on Saturday. Hello and welcome your world news. Israel's killing machine continues to massacre innocent civilians in Gaza, with more women and children falling victim to the regime's brutal attacks. Gaza officials says nearly 60 people were killed within 24 hours. One of the latest attacks killed two civilians, including a child in the Nusayrat refugee camp in central Gaza. A separate attack targeted a tent sheltering displaced people in the Al-Mawazi area of Khan Yunis, killing six Palestinians, including three children, and wounding several others. Another strike in the same area killed